Long before the Gospels were written, the Apostle Paul was traveling around Asia Minor. Just think of that for a minute. Long before the Gospels were written, Paul was traveling around Asia Minor. Paul preceded Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in his conversion and in spreading his passion, what he knew about Jesus, even though he had never met Jesus. It kind of messes with your mind because we open the New Testament and there's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then Paul, but Paul preceded all of the accounts of Jesus' life. So he was traveling around Asia Minor telling Jews and non-Jews about Jesus. He really got around all over modern-day Greece, including the cities of Corinth and Athens, Crete, Thessalonica, and Ephesus in modern-day Turkey, and also places like Jerusalem and Malta and Rome and Cyprus. This is without motorized vehicles. Paul begins his letters to the people in these locations, which he has visited, with a salutation to the community, to the Church of God in Corinth, for example, or to the saints and faithful brethren of Christ in Colossae, or to God's beloved in Rome who are called to be saints. His purpose is to address the community. What he most values, is who they are as Christians together. And yet Paul recognizes that every community is made up of individuals. And individuals are not the same. They have different strengths, different weaknesses, different gifts. Wisdom, faith, healing, interpretation, etc. He understands how to honor the individual and call everyone to consider how they are united in the Spirit. The Spirit must be the center of the group mission. Paul gives them reassurance about their individual spiritual gifts while saying, you, plural, all of you, I want to give you reassurance. You have the gifts you need. You are individuals, but you are one body in Christ. If you remember the variety of Paul's letters, you will also remember that his letters address his concern about all the divisions and quarrels between members of these different communities, differences that threaten the very livelihood of the communities. The people were not lacking in spiritual gifts, nor, unfortunately, were they lacking in earthly quarrels. What had happened at the church in Corinth? What happened was that they had begun arguing over who had more authority and stature in the community, depending on who baptized them. Perhaps sarcastically, it sounds sarcastic to me, Paul says at one point, I'm really glad I only baptized two people, Crispus and Gaius, so that more of you are not claiming to be baptized in my name versus somebody else's name. He asks a rhetorical question. Were you baptized in the name of Paul? To which they should know the answer. They were baptized in the name of the Trinity, God, Jesus, and the Spirit, not an earthly person. The Corinthians were also arguing over who was wisest. To this, Paul answers, God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom. God's weakness stronger than human strength. Paul began the first letter to the Corinthians knowing about these arguments. No doubt he is feeling pretty low about this community dissolving into schism, jealousy, and posturing. But remarkably, Paul doesn't criticize them, but reassures them that there are more than enough gifts, not so much for all of them, but already within every person, enough gifts. And so here is the tension How were they, and how are we to balance who we are as individuals with who we are as a community? This is also an important question for Church of the Three Crosses in this time of transition. How do we move from seeing ourselves as autonomous, individual thinkers, gifted with spiritual gifts, and also living in community, in an essential relationship as a group, a relationship that I believe is more important than who we are as individuals? I heard Robert Reich, does anybody remember that name? Robert Reich, Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. I got to hear him speak at University of Chicago some years ago. And he said, the economy is not a zero-sum game. The economy is not a pie where if one piece is taken, there is a net reduction in what is available to others. In fact, it is counterintuitive that when one part of the economy thrives, it actually creates well-being for other parts of the economy. Sharing the economic pie is actually more like putting a pie into the oven, and after baking it, it's magically created more pies. Or better yet, it's about giving away that pie and seeing that the pan sort of magically fills up again with pie. More pie is created as you share the pie that is there. It is why countries need to spend lots of money in a recession or a depression, because the pie magically makes more pie. Paul is also saying that being a Christian community is not a zero-sum game. Spiritual gifts are not countable, measurable in the normal ways of counting. As individuals, we may disagree on some things, but God has given everyone gifts, and all the gifts are part of the Spirit, which is limitless. There is no hierarchy to spiritual gifts. No spiritual gift is given, takes away from another. And the power of baptism is not aligned with the person baptizing. The power of baptism is in the Spirit. No baptizer or baptism can take away from any other. God cares about community. When we demonstrate that we can grow and live in harmony and community, it is evidence that God is working in us. There was a time when Martin Luther King Jr. was part of a student movement for civil rights, and everyone was arrested. Then, after a time in jail, everyone was released except King, who was kept incarcerated for a charge that was not named. King was transported across the state of Georgia and put in solitary confinement, cut off. While in prison, he wrote to his wife, quote, "I have faith to believe that the suffering that is coming to our family will somehow make Atlanta a better city, Georgia a better state, America a better nation. Just how, I do not yet know, but I have faith to believe that it will." King gave us a gift. A conviction that no matter the cost, no matter that he could not see the outcome, he knew the civil rights movement was worth fighting for. It is what mattered most. Civil rights would not be diminished for some if they were given to all. Civil rights was not a zero-sum game either. Any dose of the Spirit, even or especially the Spirit that lives through suffering for a just and right cause, this Spirit multiplies a spiritual outcome. Civil rights are important because every person deserves dignity and to have access to essential resources. What is still mystifying to me as an adult is that civil rights also means a healthier economy. In fact, civil rights for all people means increased health, education, employment for all people, which translates to a healthier economy for all people. There are real economic benefits to everyone when there is broad access to health, education, employment, and housing. Ending racism, increasing our love for one another, benefits all people. Despite the conflict in Corinth, despite Paul's disappointment that the community had not coalesced, Paul didn't say, "You're doing it all wrong." He said, "I have faith. I have faith to believe we can do this. We can become the community of Christ. I can't see exactly where this is going, but I know the way to go is to be fools for Christ." Maybe God is like a theater director. God puts us on this vast stage of the universe, puts us in touch with our creative urges, our will, a mind to recognize mistakes, a conscience and sensitivity to know how we affect others, and spiritual gifts. But God lets us do the improvising. Psalm 139 seems to suggest that we do not get to do the improvising, that God has predetermined everything we're going to do. Verses like, "For there is not a word on my tongue, but you, O Lord, know it altogether," seems to suggest that maybe it's God who is doing our talking. But upon more careful examination, this psalm suggests that God knows us, is all present to us, and is our intimate creator, but not our puppeteer. I don't believe it suggests that God predetermines what we say and do. God's knowing doesn't mean God is predetermining our lives. In this verse, it starts, "In even darkness is no darkness with you. The night is as clear as the day. Darkness and light to you are both alike." In that verse, we can conclude that God is knowing is going to be something significantly different than our knowing, and that our understanding of darkness, which might include fear, vulnerability, is something unique to us. Our understanding of dark cannot capture God's understanding of days and nights. God can know us through and through, but we cannot know God through and through. And so we're left with a need to lean into trusting this, trusting with faith. The psalmist praises the mystery of God, that we cannot know the fullness of God. If God is like a theater director, we don't have a script, we maybe have some guidelines, some notes in the margins. God names us before we're born. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We were and are and will be seen and known and valued in a way we cannot comprehend. This intimacy for each of us individually is hugely appealing to us as individuals, but God also wants us to be a harmonious community. God creates community and longs for us to create community. As Diana Butler Bass says, God creates for the sheer joy of companionship. God even feels sorry for Adam because the first man is lonely. God creates a companion. Paul is carrying forward the idea from this Psalm 139 that we are each fearfully and wonderfully made by naming our spiritual gifts. He doesn't yet have a blueprint for what will help the community coalesce. Just think about how anxious that might have made him. He doesn't have a blueprint for what's going to happen. But he knows that they all need to discern and learn and respect the gifts in each other. Gifts that, when exchanged and shared, will multiply. And yet daily we are confronted with a world that tells us otherwise. The world offers a lot of wisdom, but most of it's not the real deal. The world calls us to be knowers, to brag about and proclaim our wisdom, even to claim we've done things we have not done, to create a false persona on the internet. Or, as in this last week's news, you fill in the blank for which politician has stood out as the one who created a false image of himself. The real deal, God's wisdom, is quite different, according to Paul. Paul does not threaten or punish those who are bragging or posturing. He invites us to discover our spiritual gifts and notice those in each other. We get stuck centered in our own journeys when we forget Paul's call to be community, and we live with the image of self-sufficiency. Walter Brueggemann says, this is a very wordy quotation, so I'm going to read it slowly. The self-sufficient person knows down deep that self-securing and self-satisfaction finally are unachievable because they represent life in a world where no gifts are given. The outcome of such autonomy without allies or autonomy without support is an endless process of anxiety, for one never has enough or has done enough to be safe and satisfied. And I would add that not only are no gifts given, but no gifts are received, not from our family, our neighbors, our country, our faith community, and most sadly, it's in an illusion of self-sufficiency, we are not acknowledging God's gifts of life and grace and love. I celebrate the one beautiful gift in our United Church of Christ and United Methodist Churches, a way we can be fools for Christ. We can wear our doubt on our sleeve. We don't need to be certain. We say all can come and celebrate and wrestle with their faith, and still we can be on separate journeys, but one community. Why? Because we trust there are spiritual gifts in every person. That is a real freedom our denominations give to us, and we can give to each other and to our community. You don't have to take any tests to be part of our community. Our covenant as Christians is not to be in perfect faith, but to lean into our improvisation, trusting God is with us, to proclaim the God whom we experience, and to proclaim God in our midst. We are anchored to the Bible and yet free to discern from theologians, from other teachers, from each other, from our own experience, where God is calling us to go. That's enormous freedom. We, the people of Three Crosses, have a tagline. What's our tagline? Does anybody know our tagline?
Wherever you are on life's journey.
Say it loud.
Wherever you are on life's journey.
That fits with our tagline, but the one that's just right there in a few words on our website is many journeys, one community. They fit together. We have a challenge this interim year. From our many journeys, how can we tell our individual stories and see that they become one whole story together? Our challenge is to discover whom we aspire to become together. Our unfinished work in the next months is to tell these stories. I want you to hear that. Our unfinished work in the next few months is to tell these stories. As a foundation on which our dreams might surface, our dreams for the future, I trust the church will get to a point where all of us, you, me, everyone, will be able to tell the story including our experiences of disagreement and division without shame. It is important to be able to speak out loud how mistakes, we all make mistakes, how mistakes have brought us to truth-telling, how we value transparency, and that we are moving forward into the light of Epiphany, into the light of the stars that are part of our Christmas story. This is essential as a foundation so that the next chapter of the story, your hopes and dreams, not the ones you had 10 or 20 or 5 years ago. I'm not talking about those dreams. They exist, they can be talked about, but those are not the dreams that are going to move you into the future. A new dream, a new hope, one that you are still forming, one open to ideas others are bringing, open to ideas of the person who has not yet visited here, but will so in the next year, so that the next chapter of your story may unfold. I'd like to close with a quotation from the writer Madeleine L'Engle. "We do not draw people to Christ by loudly discrediting what they believe, by telling them how wrong they are and how right we are, but by showing them a light that is so lovely that they want with all their hearts to know the source of it. Tell your story because it's a light, a testimony to God working in your midst. Amen."